afterward. The elusive Socrates. We know about Socrates from two main sources, Plato and Xenophon, both of whom were pupils of Socrates. Plato went on to become a philosopher, recording his philosophy in his masterly dialogues, a large number of which feature Socrates. Xenophon, on the other hand, became a soldier whose military career was such a disaster that he turned to writing instead. One of his best-known works is his Memorabilia, which describes Socrates. Unfortunately, these two first-hand sources present us with two different pictures of Socrates, which only occasionally overlap. Xenophon was conservative by nature and was outraged that his old teacher should be accused of corrupting the youth of Athens. His defensive portrayal of Socrates contains a wealth of anecdotal detail, but very little actual philosophy. Indeed, sometimes Socrates scarcely appears to be a philosopher at all. In one of Xenophon's dialogues, Economicus, Socrates turns up as a character, but is mainly concerned with offering advice on how to look after a garden. And often in Xenophon's Memorabilia, Socrates' ideas are so boring and unoriginal that it is difficult to see what all the fuss over him was about. Such a man should certainly never have been prosecuted for preaching subversive ideas, but such a man was also never a great philosopher. Xenophon may have been too dim to absorb Socrates' ideas, but he also gives the impression of being too dim to present an imaginative picture of Socrates that wasn't true. For this reason, many have been inclined to accept Xenophon's picture of Socrates. Bertrand Russell firmly disposes of this attitude. A stupid man's report of what a clever man says is never accurate, because he unconsciously translates what he hears into something that he can understand. Conversely, Plato's rendering of Socrates may have been too clever by half. The Socrates who emerges from Plato's dialogues is a masterfully drawn literary portrait. Here is a superb character, but very much a work of art, prompting suspicion that it may well be an improvement on the original man. An improvement with artistic rather than moral intent. Plato's Socrates is no saint. Likewise, there is the difficulty of separating what Socrates actually said from what Plato wanted him to say. We know that Plato put much of his own philosophy into Socrates' mouth, but how much? The picture of Socrates I have drawn is taken from both these sources. Where they overlap, one sometimes catches a glimpse of an unmistakable but unpredictable character. This is the elusive man I have tried to capture. All are agreed that Socrates prided himself on a certain elusiveness both in his arguments and his personality. He may well have eluded us to this day. The legacy of Socrates. Socrates' heritage is an ambiguous one, as no doubt he would have wished it. His influence on Plato was profound, and as such has continued to permeate philosophy to this day. This ancient Greek legacy has been compared to garlic. Once it got into the dish, it was impossible to get it out. One taste of philosophy and its ancient Greek flavor continues to repeat itself, no matter what. Socrates' dialectic proved decisive. This conversational method almost certainly dictated the literary form of Plato's great dialogues, but its effect on philosophy is difficult to exaggerate. Socrates' method of analyzing a subject was the first significant use of reason for its own sake in philosophy. He would begin by asking his adversary to define the subject under discussion, which might be anything from the nature of justice to the method of becoming a general. Whether sublime or ridiculous, the subject was given the same treatment. This was the great innovation of the dialectic. It was a tool that could be applied to anything. Having elicited a definition of the subject, Socrates would then proceed to make holes in it, and in the process a better definition would be achieved. In this way, he advanced from particular examples to those with more general application, finally arriving at a universal truth. Such truths, and Socrates' method of arriving at them, were the forerunner of logic, which was to be invented in the following century by Aristotle, Plato's pupil. Aristotle, too, accepted the theory of forms, though he modified it to his own requirements. It was Aristotle who reawakened philosophy's interest in reality, reversing the trend established by Socrates and Plato. Aristotle tried to include everything in philosophy, from cosmology to conchology, from science to sin. But in the end, his main success was in mapping out the territory of human knowledge. Once again, the emphasis was on theory rather than on hard knowledge that could be developed for practical use. Consequently, when the Romans conquered the Greeks, philosophy fell into decline. It was of no use, and thus of no use to the Romans. The collapse of the Roman Empire was followed by the Dark Ages and the religion-dominated civilization of the Middle Ages. Philosophy remained moribund, a vacuum of abstraction hermetically sealed within religious orthodoxy. The mental energy that created the most intricate, all-embracing, and profound theology the world has ever seen was capable, in technological terms, of inventing little more than the harness, whose mechanics had already been foreseen in the 3rd century BC by Archimedes. Gothic cathedrals arose amidst hovels lining streets of open sewers, and plagues were combated with superstition. This was not Socrates' fault, but the turn our thinking took as a result of his philosophy played a significant part. Human learning owes Socrates an immeasurable debt. He showed us how to use reason, but at the same time he limited our vision of where to use it. As a result, human learning was to suffer from a colossal blind spot. This lasted for no less than 3/4 of the period from the beginnings of philosophy to the present day. An example of this black spot is to be seen in the medieval attitude to the Black Death, the plague that wiped out more than half the population of Europe in the 14th century. The Black Death was known to be contagious from the very start. The disease arrived in the West after plague-ridden corpses were catapulted into a besieged Genoese trading post on the Black Sea. Yet this practical knowledge was largely ignored in favor of spiritual measures. Why? Because logic, the successor to Socrates' dialectic, was habitually applied to abstract ideas, not practical matters. As we have seen, this blind spot is recognizable in Socrates. But he should not be blamed for the enormity of its later consequences, the virtual cessation of human advance. We all make mistakes, even if we are great philosophers. We just don't expect to see them perpetuated for almost 2,000 years.